This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.
When I first saw the apartment, I liked it for all the wrong reasons. It was a basement unit in a creaky old house, the windows small and choked by ivy, the air perpetually damp. Rent was cheap and the landlord didn't ask a lot of questions. Most of what she left behind was junk, broken lamps, odd chairs. But one thing stuck out. A heavy, elaborate mirror leaned against the wall in the living room. Its frame was carved and tarnished, floral designs curling into blackened faces. It looked like something from a bad dream. From the start, the mirror made me anxious. It had that warped, old glass that smudged reflections, making it hard to know if you were really there. Irrational, I told myself. Just nerves from moving somewhere new, somewhere lonely. At first, all I noticed was a glitch at the edge, a flicker, or a sense of movement just where the reflection should end. Sometimes, while passing in the dark, the chill would deepen around it, as if the cold was leaking from the glass. Within days, things grew stranger. I lived alone, but footsteps padded behind me at odd hours, slow, deliberate, as though someone else moved with me from room to room, always falling silent when I looked into the mirror. Twice, I noticed the door to the stairwell had swung open overnight, a damp, moonlit rectangle gaping out in the gloom, though I always locked it before bed. I supposed maybe the old latch was loose and that the footsteps were the house settling. Yet the sense of being watched clung to me, thick as mildew. One evening, while folding laundry, I heard a breathy whisper behind me. My skin prickled and I spun, certain I'd locked up, but the room was empty. Only the mirror caught the ceiling light, stretching my own hunched shape into the shadows. The whispers came again over the next week, so faint they might have been voices drifting from the hallway or just the water pipes rattling, but always accompanied by a tightness in my chest and the bitter tang of iron in the air. Once I glimpsed something move behind my reflection, a thin gray arm sliding out of view. It was worse at night. The mirror was just out of sight from my mattress, but always visible enough to cast a reflection if the nightlight was on. I started to dread the thought of seeing another shape over my shoulder, so I covered it with an old bedsheet. Twice I found the sheet crumpled on the floor in the morning, the mirror bare, the glass often smeared with fog, though the rest of the basement was dry. Once, after a fitful night, I found prints on the glass, handprints lower than mine, smeared as if made by greasy fingers. Another night, I woke to the clatter of something hard hitting the ground. I sat up, breath frozen in my throat, the cold so intense it felt like winter had bled through the walls. The mirror loomed in silhouette, uncovered again. Shapes writhed in its depth, shifting as if something behind the glass moved restlessly. My mind reeled for a logical explanation. Maybe headlights from the street, my own sleep-fogged brain conjuring patterns in the dark. But the shadows didn't match anything I could reason out. The nightmare started soon after. Each night I dreamed of standing in front of the mirror, unable to look away. On the other side of the glass, my reflection's face split into a stranger's, hollow-eyed, mouth stretched open in a silent wail. I always woke with my sheets bunched in my fists, the air thick with the scent of earth and rot. I told myself I was losing it, caught up in stories and internet creepypasta. But things kept happening. Scratches appeared on the wall beside the mirror, thin lines I hadn't noticed before, forming vague, looping shapes. Once while cleaning, I found a scrap of paper wedged behind the frame. It was old and water-stained, with scrawled handwriting too faded to read clearly. The only word I could make out was stay. I tried moving the mirror to the garage, struggling with the weight and awkward shape. The moment I reached the top of the stairs, the house shuddered. A sudden low groan from the plumbing, or maybe from the joists. My foot skidded on the carpet. The mirror teetered, the glass flashed with warped light, and I nearly fell backwards down the steps. Heart pounding, I left it where it was. The sounds only intensified after that. Every night, new voices, soft scraping, the thud of footsteps heavier and closer. The basement felt colder, and the shadow at the base of the mirror grew darker, deeper even in daylight. Friends who visited said the place felt off, refusing to stay long in the living room, eyeing the corner where the mirror now loomed uncovered. I still live here for now. I keep the mirror covered as best I can, but sometimes I wake up and find the sheet on the floor, cold leaking through the room. I'd like to think all of this can be explained by a draft, noisy pipes, insomnia, or maybe even mold. But part of me still wonders, every night, what might be staring back at me from the other side of that old glass, waiting for a crack to slip through. The worst part is, I know I'll probably never find out for sure, at least not until it's far too late. Story No. 2. Growing up, I always considered myself the skeptical type. I never believed in ghosts or superstitions, and usually had a reasonable explanation for every paranormal story. That changed a bit after what's been happening in my house. I'll lay it all out here, honestly, in case someone has a better explanation. Or maybe just so I won't feel quite so crazy. It started with small annoyances, the kind you barely register during a busy week. The bottom drawer of the old oak dresser in our bedroom kept being slightly open in the mornings. At first, I thought I'd left it that way, especially after rummaging through my socks or pajamas late at night. My wife said she'd closed it too, but neither of us paid much attention. After all, the house was old. Our floors leaned and squeaked. The furniture didn't fit perfectly anymore. But then, over a couple of weeks, things escalated. Sometimes, as I was falling asleep, I'd hear a slow dragging sound, almost as if wood scraped on wood, coming from the foot of our bed where the dresser sat. It was never loud, just enough to strain your ears and freeze you in place. I'd stare into the thick darkness, squinting, trying to convince myself it was just the house settling or a distant car outside vibrating the floors. The real turning point was the night I woke abruptly, heart hammering, in pitch blackness. I heard the unmistakable creak of the bottom drawer sliding out, followed by a muffled thud. I glanced at the window. 2:57 a.m., according to the red digital glow of my ancient alarm clock. Adrenaline had me rigid, and every shadow in the room felt alive. I tried to force myself to laugh it off. Maybe the cats were playing in the room, or maybe I dreamed the sound, but the cats were both curled at my feet, barely stirring. The next morning, the drawer gaped open several inches. I pushed it closed with more force than necessary, almost daring it to move again on its own. Still determined to solve it, I inspected the dresser for slanted tracks, twisted wood or loose hardware. Nothing. The dresser was solid as ever, and none of the other drawers moved on their own. I couldn't stop thinking about it. No cat, no movement of the curtains, not even a car passing by with headlights to jostle shadows. Still, I told myself houses can shift. Old wooden drawers can warp and slip in the night. I didn't want to believe anything else. But it kept happening. Every few nights, always the same time, always the bottom drawer. Some nights I'd jolt awake with the vivid sense of being watched, the room heavy and airless. I'd find my hands clenched around the sheets and a coldness at my feet, like a draft had seeped up from beneath the bed. Even stranger, I started noticing that the contents of the drawer never stayed put. Clothes would be bunched to the back as if someone had rifled through them. A pair of socks that had gone missing weeks before turned up in the center, neatly folded. One morning I found an old photograph, one I hadn't seen in years, sitting alone in the drawer, although I'd swear it had been boxed up in the attic. Thinking it was some weird form of sleepwalking, I made a point to stack books in front of the dresser before bed. I even tied the drawer handles together with a scarf one night. The next morning the books were toppled and the scarf unraveled on the floor, like it had been untied intentionally. Things peaked one night when, around 3 a.m., I was lying awake, heart racing in the silence. From the dresser came a distinct, steady tapping, three slow knocks in perfect rhythm. I lay there frozen, lungs tight, hoping my wife would startle awake. But she remained turned away, breathing deep and even. The tapping stopped, replaced by that same slow creak. I squeezed my eyes shut, refusing to look. After that, I started sleeping in the guest room some nights, telling myself it was due to my insomnia. The guest room dresser never moved an inch, and I always woke up undisturbed. Eventually, I taped the offending drawer shut, straining the tape to the breaking point, just to be sure. The strange sound stopped. There was only a lingering unease, an awareness that something, whether my own mind or something else, was waiting for me to let my guard down. To this day, I have no solid proof of anything supernatural. Maybe the wood expands and contracts with the temperature. Maybe my mind plays tricks on me in the dark. Still, every now and then, I'll wake up at 3 a.m., heart pounding, and listen to the silent dresser, waiting for that.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
Slow, familiar creak. And I wonder quietly whether I'm keeping something out or if it's only waiting me out. Perfectly patient, just beneath the veneer of explanation. Story no 3. If someone had told me a few years ago that I'd one day start to doubt what's real in my own house, I'd never have believed them. I've always been the practical sort. Science teacher, single dad, Midwestern skepticism drilled into my bones. I bought this house, a brick 1960s ranch, because it felt sturdy and safe for me and my 5-year-old son after the divorce. It was just supposed to be a place to start over, somewhere quiet where nothing unexpected ever happened. Of course, that never lasts. The first thing I noticed was how restless my son became at night. He'd always been a good sleeper before, but now he whined and complained at bedtime and started waking up, whimpering, sometimes straight out crying. The first time it happened, I blamed overstimulation, new routines, bad dreams. But his eyes were wide and wild, and as I tried to settle him, he kept glancing at the air vent above his bed, a rusted old thing built into the far wall. Each time he insisted that a little girl was talking to him from inside the vent. I laughed it off then, telling myself it was just his imagination running wild. But then I started noticing it myself, late on those nights when sleep wouldn't come easy. The bedroom door would stand open, and I'd pass by in the hallway. In the hush of the early morning, I'd stop. If the furnace wasn't running and the neighborhood was silent, sometimes I'd almost hear a faint giggling, a whisper too soft to be the wind. It sounded like it came from deep in the vent, more echo than sound, more suggestion than substance. I kept telling myself it was air whistling or pipes expanding, but my mind circled back to what my kid had said. Each time I heard it, the temperature seemed to drop just a little, and the tiny hairs on my arms prickled upright. After a week or two of this, my son grew increasingly frightened. He begged me to move his bed, or at least let him sleep with me. Always the same story, the same sad little girl's voice whispering his name, asking him to play, promising she was just lonely. Some nights he wet the bed, others he stayed awake until dawn, staring wide-eyed at the vent while his knuckles whitened on the blanket. One night, with both of us exhausted and raw, I decided to investigate. I removed the vent cover, cold to the touch, and shone my flashlight down the duct, expecting to find maybe a mouse or a wasp nest. Instead, I saw only darkness, stretching away like a tunnel. I rapped on the metal, expecting silence. What I got was one soft, echoing reply, like the memory of a voice which seemed to float back up the air shaft. I told myself it had to be the acoustics. The next day, determined to end his fears, I shoved an old baby monitor near the vent, leaving the receiver by my bed. That night, around 2 in the morning, the monitor picked up something, a whisper that was almost words, too quiet at first. Then a sound, unmistakably childish, sang out, a brief giggle followed by the faintest, dragged-out syllables that sounded just like my son's name. Goosebumps raced along my arms. I tried to dismiss it as static, an old recording bouncing through the air, a trick of the microphone in the bones of the house. But after a few nights, the monitor picked up more. A string of hiccuped breaths, a quiet, choked sob, a burst of soft singing whose tune I couldn't place. I started leaving a phone near the vent to record overnight, obsessed. The next morning, when I listened back, sometimes there would be nothing but the hum of the house. Other times, though, I'd get the whine of old metal and tinny, as if muffled by distance, a child's voice again. Once there was a second voice, rougher, almost scolding. The phone app couldn't identify any language when I ran it through, but the shape of the syllables was familiar, like the cadence of a lullaby. Maybe it was traveling through open ducts from a neighbor's house, I reasoned, but the closest neighbors were separated by brick walls and their kids were older, and anyway, none of their bedrooms lined up with our vents. Things grew stranger. My son refused to sleep in his room, insisting he saw little fingers poking through the vents slots at night, or a pale eye watching him. His toys, especially his red truck, would end up pushed directly under the vent by morning, no matter where he'd left them at bedtime. Sometimes I'd walk in to find the vent's metal slats rattling lightly in a room that wasn't drafty. In desperation, I had an HVAC company come out and clean every duct, searching for animals, explaining the story sheepishly. They found dust, a dropped coin, and nothing else. The noises continued. I started to wonder if I'd lost sleep or sanity to the voices. Maybe my brain, guided by my child's fear, was conjuring up ghosts from humming pipes and distant radios. But the worst was yet to come. On the coldest night in February, I was up late, and the furnace was off. As I passed by my son's empty bedroom, the vent gave a sudden, hollow pop. From behind it, a little girl's voice called softly, plaintively, my son's name. It was quiet but clear as day, impossible to mistake. I stood there, rooted, shamefully afraid to answer, afraid to touch the cold old metal. We started sleeping together in the living room after that, both of us relieved, both trying to ignore the slender shadow that sometimes seemed to stretch from the floor vent across the carpet at night. I still can't prove anything. Maybe sound travels farther through old ducts than I think. Maybe nerves and suggestion wear you thin. But nights are longer now, and sometimes, even when all is silent, I catch myself listening for the smallest voice, breathing my boy's name through cold and metal and old empty spaces. Story No. 4. When I bought this house at auction, it barely looked like a home. The windows were cloudy with grime, wallpaper peeled in strips, and everything smelled of old wood and dust. Still, it was all I could afford. And I'd always told myself I could handle any amount of work if it meant a place to call my own. I thought the worst surprises would be leaks or bad wiring. I had no way to prepare for what the house actually held. The first month was all hard labor, tearing up carpet, hauling trash to the curb, and trying to ignore the lingering staleness in the back hallway that even bleach wouldn't touch. That hallway was colder than anywhere else. No windows, no radiators. The air just hung there. Unmoving, always a few degrees below the rest of the house. When I hammered nails to hang a row of hooks for coats, they slid out after a day or two, no matter how deep I set them. At first, I shrugged it off as crumbly plaster, typical of an old place. That changed when I started hearing strange noises at night, specifically from near that hallway. It wasn't the usual pops of wood settling or pipes knocking. This was more deliberate, a scraping across the plaster, sometimes a tap-tap-tapping that made me think of little fingers drumming. I pressed my ear to the wall more than once, heart thudding, reasoning that it had to be vermin or the wind, though the nights were dead calm. One Saturday, as I prepped to paint, I decided to move an old bookshelf the previous owner had bolted to the hallway wall. As I pried it free, the shelf gave way, revealing a faint outline in the wallpaper. On my hands and knees, running my finger along the edge, I discovered a door. The bottom was tight against the floor, and the entire thing had been painted and papered over, with nails hammered in around the frame. The wood was splintered, gray with age. I hesitated, nerves jangling, before levering out the nails and tugging it open. Stale air rushed out, cold and thick, laced with a faint, sour smell beneath the dust. Something old and vaguely sweet, like rotting flowers. The room was no bigger than a walk-in closet, with a ceiling so low I had to crouch. The carpet was sunken and mildewed. Against the far wall sat a battered child's chair, the paint mottled and peeling. Beside it, a child's mattress, water-stained, stuffing exposed at the corners, with an old threadbare blanket draped over it like a shroud. Up above, nailed to the wall, was a faded photograph of a little girl in a white dress, her face scratched away so thoroughly I couldn't even tell her expression. An unexplainable chill settled into my spine as I took it in, every instinct screaming to close the door and forget it existed. Dust coated everything, and there were claw marks, small, shallow scratches, on the inside of the door, almost unnoticeable unless you squinted in the light. The weeks that followed turned strange. The cold in the hallway started creeping, spreading outward, seeping into the adjacent bathroom and the little bedroom at the end of the corridor. The heater would run, but if you stood in front of that hidden room, you could see your breath. It was thick, suffocating cold, with a damp edge that never left. Sometimes I'd catch a whiff of that rotten flower scent drifting through the main rooms like a warning. Worse were the noises, scratching, muffled banging, sometimes what sounded like a child laughing, faint as radio static, echoing far back in the walls. It always started after midnight and faded with the sunrise. More than once, I woke up covered in goosebumps, heart racing, certain I'd heard my name whispered from somewhere in the house. Once I found a set of my tools lined up in a neat row near the door to that hidden room, tools I was sure I'd left in the garage. I did everything I could imagine. I set mouse traps, put out baby powder to catch footprints, and even tried recording audio. The recordings only caught static and an occasional low click, like someone gently tapping on the mic. No vermin, no prints, nothing I could point to. The walls remained cold and the air stayed thick. A friend came over once to help fix the hallway and refused to walk past the hidden room. She swore she felt something brush her arm, icy and quick, and nearly bolted when she thought she heard a quiet voice say, "Go," behind her. I laughed it off at the time, but later I found her handprint in the powder outside the door, a second, much smaller print overlapping it, impossible for me to recreate. Tired of sleepless nights and the cold that never lifted, I nailed the door shut, restoring the plaster and painting over it until the room looked like it never existed. But at night, especially if the house is quiet, I still hear that soft scraping, that tapping from inside the wall. Sometimes in the hallway, I sense a presence, small, restless, as if a child is standing right behind me, waiting to be noticed again. I tell myself it's all just drafts, old pipes and nerves, and a tired mind playing tricks. But deep down, I wonder how many places like this exist, bruised with memories no owner ever meant to uncover, places better left buried behind a bookshelf and forgotten to time. Story No. 5. I always liked having family photos around. My apartment is small and pretty bland, so the old pictures make it feel like home. Rows of frames sit on my dresser and shelves. School portraits, faded Polaroids of cousins at backyard parties, a couple of black and white wedding shots from before I was even born. The place is usually quiet. When I moved in, I never thought much about the way things felt at night, or how the air sometimes turned heavy and cold for no reason. But lately, some things have been happening that I can't shake off. It started simple enough, a picture frame turned around, glass side down on the dresser. I figured I must have knocked it over while dusting and didn't notice. The next day, two more frames in the living room were face down on the bookshelf, and the one in my bedroom was now sideways, right on the edge. I always thought maybe I bumped into the shelves or that vibrations from traffic outside shook the frames around. Old apartments are never perfectly level. Even a slight tilt could make things slide. But the pattern kept up. Every morning, different photos would be flipped, often with the face of someone close to me hidden. Sometimes it was my mom's graduation photo or my sister's first day of school. The older frames were heavier and harder to knock over, but they'd still be face down or slanted off to the side, as if someone had grabbed the top and gently rotated them. One time as I picked them back up, I noticed that the dust around some frames was smudged, showing what looked almost like skidding fingerprints. Sleep became harder. It wasn't just the thought of who was turning the pictures, but the strange dreams that started coming. Most nights I lay in bed half awake, my eyes drawn over and over to the dresser where the pictures sat. In my dreams, the faces in the frames were wrong, blank, with their features blurred or missing, or worse, their mouths stretched unnaturally wide, too dark and deep to be part of any real photo. Sometimes their eyes were covered by a thick, black shadow or scratched out as if with a broken fingernail. I tried to laugh it off, but I'd wake up feeling watched. Sometimes the silence in the apartment pressed in so tightly that even my own breathing sounded loud. After enough mornings spent writing the frames, I finally set up my phone to catch what was happening. I balanced it on a stack of books to watch the dresser, set it on time-lapse, and fell into an uneasy sleep. The video was ordinary until just before dawn, when the living room light dimmed as if a cloud passed in front of the window. Nothing on the dresser moved for hours. Then, almost imperceptibly, the frame holding my parents' wedding photo started to shake. It didn't fall or slide. It tilted forward as if nudged from above, slow, deliberate, until it lay face down. The movement was too smooth, no jolt or bounce the way you'd expect if the building shook. I watched the clip over and over, convinced it was a shift in the floors, maybe a truck rumbling by, but there was no obvious cause. Over the next week, things escalated. Sometimes I'd return from work and find the pictures lined up crookedly, all facing toward the hallway with their backs to the room. More than once, I heard a faint tapping from the dresser around 3 a.m., the exact time the phone had caught the picture falling. A couple of frames developed fine cracks in the glass, like icy spider webs, even though nothing had knocked them over. The nightmares intensified. I'd see the faces in the photos watching me, their mouths opening silently or their eyes tracking me as I moved. A cold draft seemed to hover around the dresser, twisting the curtain ever so slightly even with the window shut tight. The feeling didn't leave when I was awake either. Every time I passed the frames, the skin on my forearms prickled, and a knot settled in my stomach as if someone was standing just behind me, half glimpsed in the glass reflection. One night I woke with a start to find the room freezing. Every frame had fallen or been turned away, their faces hidden. My heartbeat thudded in my ears as I checked each one, hands shaking so badly I fumbled and dropped a photo of myself as a kid. There, pressed into the back of the frame, was a perfect condensation handprint, small, childlike, and not my own. I started putting the photos away one by one, packing them in boxes stashed in the closet. The apartment feels emptier now, yet some mornings I'll find a box nudged open or a frame leaning out on top, its glass fogged as if someone had breathed across it in the night. Logical explanations still float through my mind. Vibrations, drafts, my own sleepwalking. Maybe old homes settle in ways that seem unnatural, or maybe all of these things are just coincidences strung together. Still, I keep the last family photo on my dresser, hoping I'll stop noticing soon. But some nights I wake up to the whisper of glass shifting and feel every eye from every sealed box following me, even through the dark. Story no 6. I've always been the kind of guy who finds comfort in routine. Work all day, come home, heat up leftovers, and kill a few hours with whatever's on TV before bed. When I moved into this place, a squat brick garden apartment on the edge of town, I figured the only weird adjustment I'd need was living with creaky floors and the faint smell of mildew. But I got used to that easy enough. What's never felt right is the old television left in the living room by the previous tenant. It's a heavy wood-paneled set from the 90s, the kind that thuds when you switch it on. The thing barely gets channels unless you adjust the rabbit ear antenna just so. I never thought much of it until the first time I tried flipping through the channels late one night. Most were a wash of rainbow static and snowy flickers, but channel 4 stuck out. No matter the time during the day, Channel 4 was nothing but loud black and white static, a soft hiss that filled the room with its ghostly white noise. During the day, it was unremarkable. The static was just static. But the first night after moving in, when insomnia had me up at 2 a.m., I noticed something strange. Alone sitting in the dark, sound turned low, I swore I heard the static shift. An overtone, a kind of whisper, almost hidden beneath the fuzz. It was so faint, I leaned forward, trying to catch the sound. At first, it was like a radio out of tune, just bits of muffled chatter. Then it started to sound like words, delicate and slippery, as if they were being spoken from the bottom of a well. The hairs on my arm bristled. I figured it was just interference, maybe a stray signal bleeding in, or a neighbor's baby monitor or CB radio leaking through. But over the next few nights, every time the clock crept past 1 a.m., and I landed on Channel 4. The whispers grew more insistent. Sometimes in the static, I'd catch my name. The first time I heard it, the chill crept right up my spine. The whisper didn't sound like my own voice or a recording, but thinner, hungrier, almost a plea. Of course, I told myself I was tired, my mind primed by loneliness and a little too much booze. That excuse worked until I started seeing things too. Not every night, but often enough that I started keeping the television off entirely after dark. Out of the corner of my eye, shapes would pulse in the whitewash. Their forms indistinct, but just human enough. Two black holes for eyes, a twist of a mouth, faces flickering in and out of the snow faster than my mind could hold them. Sometimes the static would resolve briefly into a hand. Sometimes it was just a word, crawling across the screen in jagged lines. Impossible to read except for the feeling that, if I stopped blinking for a moment, I would. I invited a friend over to watch with me. He shrugged it off as tricks of the light or bad wiring, and on the nights when he was there, Channel 4 was empty noise. I asked the landlord, who laughed and said it was probably old cab dispatch, signals bleeding through the walls. He told me the last guy who lived here also complained about TV weirdness and had replaced the cable, but it didn't help. According to him, the set was too stubborn to throw away. It always seemed to work, just with that one messed up channel. Night after night, though, the static felt closer. I'd doze on the sofa and wake up with the TV already switched on. Grainy snow flickering in the middle of the night. Each time, the air in the room would feel thick and damp, my mouth dry, my heart pounding for no good reason. Once, blurry with sleep, I glanced up and saw my own face on the screen, but wrong, as if it were melting or being pulled apart. When I looked back, it was gone. Other things began happening too. After nights with the static, I'd wake up to find muddy footprints just inside my back door, as if someone or something had come inside and wandered through the apartment for a few steps before vanishing. Doors I knew I'd locked would be slightly ajar in the morning. Objects would turn up in odd places. My keys in the fridge, the remote in the bathroom sink. Sometimes I'd hear a sharp knock on my wall just after switching off the TV, a single hollow sound in the darkness. Sometimes the static would spill out into other appliances. My phone would buzz with garbled voicemails at 1:11 a.m. Only static, no number. The old radio in the kitchen would crackle to life, playing a single warped lullaby, then cut off. I started unplugging the TV at night, but the whispers lingered. Even now, every so often, I'll wake in the dark with the static echoing through my head, a cold wind curling in under the door, the faint scent of something metallic on the air. Maybe it's all caused by faulty wiring or the power grid's old signals snaking through these ancient walls. Maybe it's just my mind working overtime in the loneliness and sleeplessness of the early hours. But some nights with the television dead black in front of me, I still catch the faint impression of a face, waiting, just beneath the surface, wanting to be seen. I haven't dared turn on Channel 4 since, yet I know as soon as the static returns, I'll be unable to look away. Story No. 7, I've never liked perfumes. I'm badly allergic. My sinuses swell, my eyes water, my throat gets itchy even if I walk past someone on the street wearing strong fragrance. Maybe that's why I've always been so careful about what I bring into my apartment. My cleaning supplies are all unscented. I wash my clothes with hypoallergenic soap, and I never even let visitors spray anything floral when they come over. The place is just a boxy little one-bedroom, nothing fancy, but it's been a safe space for me where I don't have to worry. A few months ago, everything changed. It started subtly, almost as if I was remembering something instead of actually smelling it. In the middle of the night, I'd wake up coughing, my nose tingling with the unmistakable scent of rose and lilac, an old-fashioned, thick, powdery perfume, the kind my grandma wore when I was little. At first, I assumed I'd dreamed it. When I'd sit up, the scent would vanish, replaced by the stale bedroom air. But the triggers got stronger, and soon the perfume became so powerful, it felt like someone had sprayed it right onto my pillow. It was always about 3 a.m. when the smell came back. Floating out of nowhere, heavy, cloying, enough to sting the back of my throat. The room didn't feel right either. The shadows stretched further across the ceiling, and a thin, damp chill wormed its way through the sheets. Sometimes I'd feel a strange weight sinking the edge of the mattress, like someone had sat down next to me even though I lived alone. My chest would tighten, heartbeat galloping. Outside, the building would be stone quiet. No footsteps, no pipes clanking. Just that thick, old perfume hanging in the air. Eventually, I started sleeping on the couch. The living room always felt normal. Nothing out of place. No unnatural scents. But when I'd pass the bedroom door, the flowery aroma would sometimes roll out in a sudden wave. I even shut the door, stuffed a towel at the base, and hoped it'd help. Yet some mornings the whole hallway would reek of lilac and roses, stubborn and sharp. One night, trying to rule out hidden sources, I tore apart my room. I emptied the closet, looked through every box, tossed out an old area rug, and wiped down every surface. I even checked the crawl space vent, thinking maybe someone in another unit was spraying too much air freshener, and it was drifting in. There was nothing. I texted my neighbor in the next apartment to ask if they'd started using something new. She hadn't, and besides, she used lemon-scented cleaning stuff. No flowers, ever. After a couple of weeks, things got stranger. I'd often wake up to a whisper of cold air brushing the side of my neck, like a sigh, followed by that choking perfume. The pressure on the bed would return, heavier, pinning me in place. Sometimes I'd have dreams where a woman in a white dress, her face always out of focus, stood at the foot of my bed, eyes shining, as she leaned forward and the scent enveloped me, thick enough to drown in. I'd wake gasping, the room freezing, and the scent stronger than ever, just on the edge of being physically unbearable. The worst happened when I opened my eyes one night and thought I saw a pale figure perched on the end of the mattress. She wore something gauzy and old-fashioned, her hair loose and dark, but her face blurred, washed out by moonlight streaming through the blinds. I blinked and she was gone, leaving only the impression of movement, a sinking weight where she had been, and the perfume so thick my eyes stung with tears. Trying to convince myself it was all in my head, I double-checked for leaks, mold, or maybe some weird reaction in the heating ducts that could carry in scents. The landlord sent over a building inspector who found nothing. No damp, no chemicals, no record of anyone in our block using that kind of fragrance. The inspector hinted that maybe it was phantom smells or parosmia, especially since I had a bad cold over the winter. Maybe my brain was misfiring, he said. I wanted to believe him, but I found it hard to accept when the scent felt so solid, so choking, and only ever appeared when the hour crept toward 3 in the morning. Sometimes objects moved. Twice I woke to find an old ring, my grandma's, long boxed up, sitting on the nightstand, still smelling faintly of roses. My pillow would be dented with an impression, sharp as someone's head, even though I tossed and turned on the far side of the bed. And just once, in the mirror opposite the foot of my bed, I thought I glimpsed someone standing behind my shoulder, a slip of white, a flicker of a shadow just before I turned the lights on. The perfume still comes and goes. I rarely sleep in my bedroom now, and I keep the window open, even in winter. I sometimes wonder if old buildings remember who lived in them, or if memories can get trapped in the cracks and leaks and wake you up in the dead of night. Maybe it's nothing more than my sensitive nose or stress or nerves. But when the scent floods in, cold and sweet and almost mournful, it lingers for hours after. I can never quite convince myself there's nothing left behind in the darkness, breathing in time with me, watching from the end of the bed. Story No. 8. When we first moved into this old Victorian a year ago, my wife called it quirky. The staircase creaked, the floor slanted near the kitchen, and the roof groaned when the weather changed. Still, the rooms were big, the windows bright, and there was a strange charm that made me hopeful. Within the first few weeks, we chalked up every oddity to the house's age. Doors that stuck, spiderweb cracks in the plaster, and walls that felt a little uneven if you ran your hand along them. Looking back, I wish I'd paid more attention to those walls. The changes started so subtly they seemed like tricks of memory. In the first month, I noticed that our living room felt off. There was more space between the hallway and the couch. It was just a few inches, and I figured maybe we'd place the furniture a little differently after the movers left. My wife laughed it away, and the kids didn't care one way or another. But as the weeks went on, the space kept shifting. We'd set down the rug flush against the wall at night, and by morning, there was a crescent of bare wood showing between it and the baseboard. At first, I tried to blame it on warping floors or an old house settling. But each morning, something else was slightly out of place. The outlet for the TV seemed lower. The light switch in the hallway was inched over, a few tiles to the left. I would shrug, fix it, and move on. But the sense of unease grew every time I walked through that hallway. My wife accused me of being absent-minded or overly stressed from work. The kids liked to joke they were living in a funhouse. I decided to test my sanity with masking tape, drawing a line where the living room rug met the wall. I measured and even left a level perched on the floor, just to be sure. The next day, both had shifted by half an inch, neither one in the direction I expected. The tape buckled as if the wall had moved right over it, and the level rolled in the opposite direction, as if the very ground beneath us was tilting. Sometimes I'd find doors in strange positions, closed when I left them open, stuck when they should swing easily. Room by room, odd things began to pile up. Photographs on the walls would hang crooked, their hooks barely gripping the now tilted nail. The kitchen table, always nestled perfectly beneath the window, somehow found itself canted at an angle each evening. Drawers wouldn't fit back into their tracks, and the space beneath the stairs felt deeper than before. I blamed the weirdness on the kids at first, thinking they were playing tricks, but they seemed as puzzled as I was. Then I started noticing things moving in ways that didn't make sense. Shoes left neatly at the bottom of the stairs would end up pushed far along the wall, in a corner where the floor suddenly seemed to dip. Books vanished from their shelves, then reappeared in places I never would have put them. An old wooden spinning top, the kind I'd never seen before, turned up in a bedroom, and none of us claimed it. At night, the air was thick with the smell of dust and old wood, heavier and colder than it should have been. One evening, my son swore the upstairs hallway was longer than before. I laughed it off until I had to walk it myself, only to realize the light from the bathroom door didn't reach quite as far as I remembered, and the hallway seemed to stretch, swallowing the end in darkness. I measured again the next morning, but the tape read the same as always. My head hurt from trying to make sense of it. As the months passed, the dream started. I'd dream of running through endless hallways, the wallpaper peeling as the wall squeezed in, pressing until I couldn't breathe. Sometimes I'd wake convinced I heard voices murmuring through the plaster, muffled like radio static, or catch a tap-tap-tapping in the dead of night. Once, my daughter woke up crying because, in her dream, the walls had closed in until her bed was completely boxed in, no door in sight. Sometimes the kids said they heard someone whispering from inside the walls. I tried not to ask too many questions. Guests who stayed overnight always left early, claiming the house felt confusing or too drafty. One friend refused to come over again after getting lost trying to find the bathroom and winding up in the basement, doorless, for almost half an hour. The last straw came a few weeks ago. I came home to find a new hair-thin crack tracing from the ceiling down the center of our bedroom wall. Even more unsettling, the wall seemed to bulge slightly, as if something behind it was pressing out, shifting the edges of the frame. When I pressed my ear to the crack, I could have sworn I heard breathing, slow and deep, like a massive animal slumbering just beyond. Since then, my sleep is shallow, always broken by the distant scuffling of movement or walls creaking, shifting as if the house is slowly rearranging itself around us. Rationally, I tell myself it's the humidity, the age of the place, or shifting foundations, things a building inspector could explain in daylight. But every night, as I feel the house stretch and contort, as if it's learning to breathe with us inside, I wonder if there's something much older and hungrier in these walls, growing stronger each time we choose to ignore it. I still hope one morning we'll wake up and the walls will stop changing. But deep down, I know we're only fooling ourselves and that the house isn't finished with us yet. Story 09. It wasn't a house I'd call perfect, but after my divorce, I was grateful for anything I could afford that didn't smell like mildew the minute you stepped inside. From outside, the place just looked tired. Peeling paint, the slant of time sagging the porch roof, maples crowding the eaves. It had an attic, something I thought would be good for storage. I didn't mind the stairs groaning or the wind making the rafters moan on a stormy night. At first, it just seemed like an old house settling into my presence, sighing as it grew used to me. That changed when I started hearing things above the ceiling, The noises started simple, a rhythmic scratching, as if a mouse was digging at the joists. I set traps, scattered poison, swept all the corners. It only got louder. Some nights I'd be reading and hear a thud, then dragging, like heavy furniture, shifting from one side of the attic to the other. I told myself squirrels had found a way in, or maybe there was a raccoon family up there, but the attic entrance was just a grimy little hatch in the hallway ceiling, sealed with a rusty hook since I moved in. One morning, my breakfast was interrupted by a horrible crashing sound. I ran upstairs and yanked the hatch open, steeling myself for a nest of angry animals. It was empty, only the dust churning in a draft that hadn't existed before. I noticed an old doll, porcelain face stained and one eye missing, perched by the far window. I'd never owned a doll, and I was sure it hadn't been there when I placed my boxes after moving. It felt wrong seeing it there, but I chalked it up to having overlooked it during the frenzy of unpacking. Over the following weeks, my things kept disappearing. At first, it was just bread or fruit vanishing from the kitchen counter. I blame myself for being distracted.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.
Displacing things, or maybe even a neighborhood rat problem. But then shoes I left in the foyer would turn up in the attic's dusty gloom. Objects I hadn't seen since childhood, a red yo-yo, a chipped plastic lunchbox showed up clustered together beneath the attic window, the dust undisturbed except for the strange, twisting drag marks leading to that one spot each time. Unnerved, I stopped leaving things out and kept my bedroom door firmly shut at night. Still, each morning, something else would be missing, a sock, a spoon, a photograph. I'd climb into the attic and there they'd be, lined up or half buried in piles of old insulation, as if the attic had plucked them from my life and hidden them there. One morning I found my wallet open, money missing, but the bills later tucked behind a decaying rafter above the hatch. The air up there started smelling odd, like burnt sugar laced with old perfume. The closer I got to the window, the colder the air became, chilling my breath no matter the season. When I tried to clear out the old junk, the noises only got worse. At 3 a.m., the dragging gave way to muffled thumps, sometimes sharp knocks that seemed to answer the sound of my own footsteps. I'd hear giggles, small, childish, echoing as if the attic was a mouth, and every sound bounced off invisible teeth. At my limit, I placed motion sensors and baby powder across the floor to catch any sign of animals or intruders. Each morning, the powder was smudged, not in paw prints, but in long, finger-like drags. The sensors clicked on, but all they recorded were faint flashes, something darting across the lens, too quick and dark to make sense of. I started keeping the attic completely locked, even though the hatch didn't look as if it could hold back much of anything. I tried to stop thinking about it, telling myself all old homes have weird drafts and nest-seeking critters, and maybe I'd just been more forgetful than ever. But things kept escalating. After nights when the attic was especially noisy, I'd wake to find the furniture in the living room slightly nudged, as if someone had dragged it a few inches closer to the ceiling. Sometimes the smell of burnt sugar would drift through the floorboards and settle over me, sticky and thick. I tossed out the doll, but it would turn up days later, perched on top of the attic hatch, blank face staring down, hair tangling in the cold draft. Friends who visited complained of headaches and refused to go near the rope ladder that led up to the attic. Some swore they heard someone moving around above, though we were both clearly downstairs. Once, a guest slept on the couch and woke shrieking that something cold and soft had pressed their hand through the wall from above. I still hear the dragging most nights, always as I'm falling asleep. Sometimes I wake to a child's voice humming in the darkness overhead, sometimes just a breath, wet, slow, as if something waits, hungry and endlessly patient, inches above. The attic hatch sometimes rattles gently at night, and my missing things continue to turn up, one by one, covered in a thin coat of dust and a scent that leaves an ache in the back of my throat. I keep telling myself it's just animals, the house settling, tricks of shadow and memory. But each morning the attic seems to know me better, pulling a little more of my life up into its cold, empty belly. I worry what it might want next, and some nights I stare at that ceiling, listening, too afraid to even breathe.